Good evening and welcome. This is Henry Banks, senior producer and host of People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up tonight, I'm joined by POC production assistant Michaela Lampert and POC special features representative Charles OBJ. We will discuss food, arts, culture, the political landscape, and more from an African heritage perspective. All of this coming up next on People of Color with Henry Banks after this news.
Charles OBJ, I'm a community member, advocate in Duluth.
Oh, this is Michaela Lampert, production assistant, and I'm kind of just along for the ride.
This is going to be a great conversation. Yeah. This is Henry Banks. I'm honored that Charles and Michaela have come together to put this segment of the show in place, and we're going to be doing several of these conversations. As Charles and Michaela have mentioned, this is about our perspective as people of color on the food fair in Duluth and other parts of the state and the country and the world also. So sit back and enjoy this conversation. And Charles, I'm going to just let you take over.
Perfect. Thank you, Harry. So we started the conversation with your perspective, your culture, and how that affects or impacts your food choices. Do you want to?
Well, I grew up in mainly white cities, and my parent is white. And so I am pretty used to the Minnesota food, right? Okay. So all the hot dishes and, you know, the lack of spice is the general joke, right? Mm-hmm. Lots of corn, lots of potatoes. So coming to Duluth, it was not a shock for me.
Right.
I can go to a restaurant and I know what I'm getting. I'm not, you know, blindsided by the lack of my culture's representation, because this is my culture. But I know a lot of friends who are first generation, or a lot of friends who are international students, or just people from other states who are, they don't feel the same way, right? They feel like they don't have options. They don't feel like they have even a grocery store that they can access to give them options to cook their own food. And so I think that's an important thing to consider if you're in a city that is trying to diversify itself.
Do you think Duluth is really trying to diversify itself? Is there any efforts being made in the city, by the city, to provide those resources?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, some might call them small starts, but they're always a start, right? There are professors like Adam Pine at UMD who is really researching food deserts in the city and how that impacts especially low-income and people of color in the Lincoln Park neighborhood, for instance. You know, there are initiatives to kind of grow the amount of resources and activities that happen in these low-income neighborhoods to, you know, build it up to what we want Duluth to be. And while it might not be diversifying along the lines of race, it definitely is at least along the lines of, you know, income and things like that, which is a start to having, you know, the cultural perspectives then of food and things like that.
Okay. And we have Henry Banks here with us.
Yes,
I mean,
of course.
You can chime in whenever you wanted to.
I do have something I want to say, because, you know, we talk about Duluth, Minnesota a lot.
Right, yeah.
But we should also incorporate Superior in that conversation,
exactly,
too, because Superior is less than 5 miles away from Duluth. And I would expect Superior is probably struggling with that same opportunity, if you will,
right,
or challenge,
right,
to provide food and food resources to a variety and diversity of people.
Nice. Well, so like you said, Duluth, Minnesota, Superior, Wisconsin, we're talking about the Twin Ports now. If we were to take a look at the data, the data
hard
tells
facts
us a whole lot, right?
Yeah.
So 88% of the population in Duluth, and then we can generalize that to Superior as well, or Two Arbors or wherever, is the white population, right?
Right.
We have 2.0 Hispanics in Duluth, 2.7% Andalus, the mixed race, which I think you fall under, is 3.0, right?
Right.
And others unidentified or identified would be 1.9. So 88 compared to 2.7.
Right. Right.
Sometimes when I think about it, sure, it makes sense that Duluth does not have that much cultural options when it comes to food.
Right.
Because the majority of the population is white, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the options that we have right now are based on just the improvisations from the people of color here. We know if you need to get some cultural options, you have to drive down to the cities, to Minneapolis, St. Paul. Or in the case of Wisconsin, Superior, you have to drive down to Madison or Milwaukee to get that cultural food or that diversity in all areas.
Right.
I know when I first moved down to Duluth from Nigeria, actually, my first place of residence was Ashland, Wisconsin, as a matter of fact. I went to school at Northland College,
sure.
Surrounded by a lot of folks with different culture, majority of them white. And the food you served there is just the hot dish, you know, potatoes, a slab of meat,
mm-hmm.
a gravy, to name a few. I mean, mostly greasy food, burgers, pizza,
right.
All lovely foods, right? You know, and then you have some influences of the Italian culture when it comes to pasta and all that, and little of the African American culture. It almost seems we have to schedule a date to eat or to publicly eat an African influence type food, you know, the African nights, right? Those are the type of, you know, time where students especially get the chance to, you know, experience that type of culture.
I'm going to say something because I'm in a partnership with two other business partners, and we are actually working to address, Charles, what you just mentioned about the African flair, if you will, of food. And the business is called North Africa.
Right.
And our goal is to provide a different option for food in the Twin Ports. We're getting really close. I'm grateful to my business partner. One is from Edina. The other's from Duluth.
Right.
We're working together to really put something in place that people will benefit from, health-wise and otherwise.
Right.
It's very important.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and I think Duluth, Superior, the Twin Port will benefit from that type of services because people are waiting to experience those cultural diverse food, waiting to experience what that tastes like, essentially. I also want to put something out there. I want to congratulate Duluth for providing more resources for the folks in Lincoln Park. At one point, Lincoln Park was declared a food desert.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have one grocery store in the Lincoln Park, a co-op grocery store in the Lincoln Park. We have a lot of our gardens, you know, being established in the Lincoln Park neighborhood. Now, one of my complaints about those gardens, I apologize to do that, is those gardens are made for middle-income individuals, right? Folks who can afford to rent a raised bed, right? As opposed to the folks who really need those services. Those are the low-income folks who can't really afford to go to the grocery stores and buy green foods, vegetables, especially those organic vegetables. The only choice of a grocery store in the Lincoln Park neighborhood is the co-op. Do you know how much it is to grocery shop in the local?
It's in West Duluth.
It's in West Duluth.
But it's easier access for people who live in Lincoln Park now to access that store.
But how much would you find groceries in the Lincoln Park compared to a Super One? It's much expensive.
Much more expensive.
Much more expensive.
Absolutely.
And the folks who can afford those are the middle-income folks, right? Same folks who can afford the garden, the raised beds to grow your own stuff. So, and I get that we're, you know, trying to implement those type of services, but those services have been implemented to folks who can actually afford it when the goal is for folks who can't afford it.
Let me ask you, though, Charles.
Yeah.
So I hear you mentioning about the raised beds and middle-class people being able to purchase and rent and all of that. wouldn't it be cool, wouldn't it be awesome if a local business person had this excess land within mm-hmm. the city
right.
and contacted you or Michaela or myself and said, we want to give you this land because right. we know you want to do the right thing
exactly.
with it.
Right.
Wouldn't that be cool if something like that were to happen?
It would be cool. I think that would be an innovative way of solving the issue we have at hand right now. Because most of those individuals who own those land don't use them, right? It's just sitting out there for taxes, like, you know. If they, at best, donated that land to, you know, provide those type of services to the individuals who really need them, that would be a start to preventing those poverty type situations we find in our neighborhoods, actually.
I think, Charles, you're on a mission. It sounds like you're on a mission.
Yeah.
It's the right kind of mission to be on.
Right.
Because it's about having the opportunity for people who are considered financially poor.
Exactly.
To get an opportunity to grow their own food.
Exactly.
And organic has been around for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. Even before the word organic came up,
right.
You know, I grew up in a household where we grew our own food.
Mm-hmm.
We raised our own, you know, we had chickens and we had pheasant and rabbit.
Right.
We did all of that ourselves within the city.
Exactly.
You know, and so I would love for us to get back to something like that where we can do these things for ourselves mm-hmm. and be self-supportive, self-sustained.
Right.
Just by virtue of doing that kind of stuff for ourselves.
Yeah, I think we're getting close.
Yeah, I think we are.
One such restaurant is the Martha's Table.
Martha's Daughter.
Is that the name of the restaurant?
Yes, Martha's Daughter.
Oh, well. She's being innovative, right?
Yeah.
So she's bringing those soul food element and translating it in a sense to what people can observe, right? What
mm-hmm.
the population around here can get. So not necessarily taken away from all of the ingredients or things that makes the soul food, but just adjusting it for people to be able to experience or taste that. And I think sometimes maybe that's what we really need to do, not in a sense dumb down the food, but to just
create a fusion sort of
exactly
thing. Mm-hmm.
For folks, you know,
yeah.
to be able to experience.
And Nayanika Banda
mm-hmm.
is the owner and chef, woman of color.
Yeah.
And she's doing a very fine job in downtown Duluth.
In downtown, I mean, that would be one restaurant I would say, if you visit Duluth, you must go there and try those food, man. A lot of soul food option in a bowl. The restaurant itself, it's very cozy.
It
right?
really is.
It's, I would say, about 10 to 15 people at a time. It's not a big restaurant. You kind of get a personalized experience if mm-hmm. you go there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that would be an option I feel people should try and can enjoy.
The chef will come out and greet you and have a conversation with you
oh, really?
About the food that you're eating.
Oh, that's wow.
It's yeah. very impressive.
See, food is really what a community centers around, I feel, I mm-hmm. think. I mean, food drives the economy of a city,
right?
Mm-hmm. However many restaurants you have, whatever else you create around food. And I think that is going to be part of the Two Harbors decision going forward, right? If we're going to continue to have these two cities, Superior and Duluth especially, that are focused around bringing in international students, they go hard for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They always are pushing for international students or first-generational students, things like that. If you're going to be doing that sort of campaigning, you need to provide places for these people to create their own community so they don't feel like they're just thrown into this, you know, 88% white culture all the time. You know, you need a space for yourself. And so I think that's part of the problem going forward, or maybe part of the solution, right, is creating, yeah, a fusion or creating some place that, you know, represents people's cultures
exactly.
in a broad way.
And the very mere fact that our demographics are changing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Minnesota, in Wisconsin, but the mere fact that our demographics are even changing in the Twin Ports begs to the fact that we have to make some of these changes happen.
Exactly.
And increase the opportunities for these kinds of things to happen. Because, again, as you mentioned, it's about culture. Mm-hmm. It's about diversity. It's about inclusion and making sure people feel as though they're welcome in that particular community. You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with, once again, with Charles OBJ and also production assistant for POC, Michaela Lampert. Earlier, we were talking about culture and food and the importance of culture and food in our communities and the real lack of diversity that exists with regard to food that we know and love in the Twin Ports. And that was a great conversation. Right now, we're going to be switching up a little bit, and this month is Black History Month. February is Black History Month in the United States of America. By the way, the shortest month of all 12 months is Black History Month. And so we can talk about that a little bit. But I want to hear from the two of you about what Black History Month means to you and why it's important to you that we celebrate the important things that Black people, African heritage people have done in this country. Michaela, let me start with you.
Sure, yeah. I think Black History Month is particularly important to highlight the struggles of a marginalized group that has suffered so much in the United States in particular. And so having this month is kind of like, it was a large win for us, if you want to call it, by having that nationally recognized. And I think today it gives us the excuse to really focus on ourselves. I mean, we still operate under this kind of, you know, white society in general. You know, a lot of positions of power are held by white people in our communities and, you know, throughout the whole country. And so having this month really gives us, you know, pause to focus on ourselves and try and support Black businesses and, you know, make Black memes, you know, whatever we need to do to be able to focus on ourselves. And I think that's why it's particularly important.
Charles?
Well, well said. I think perspective really matters in a whole lot of things that we do. Why don't we have American Indian History Month? Do we have that?
We do.
When is that?
November.
November.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, is that around Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Okay. That is quite interesting.
Very interesting, isn't it?
It takes away from the idea of Thanksgiving and the history that really happened for the American Indian.
And we have Women's History Month. That's in March.
So Women's History Month, I think, is a bit generalized to all women. Black History Month is supposed to be a month dedicated to Black history. In my mind, I'm thinking Black History Month is like every day to me. You know, personally, I experience Blackness every day, you know, so and I celebrate that every day because some people have no choice but to continue to celebrate that and wear that in front of your head every
day. It's our reality.
It's a reality.
It's our reality.
Yeah. So to shrink all of that experience into one month and say, hey, let's celebrate your history for one month. When we have a whole lot of issues surrounding race, a lot of issues surrounding unrest, what if that looks like when we have a president that said both sides were equally wronged? I like a whole lot of crazy stuff going on in our community today. I mean, we cannot afford to just have one month to celebrate, to say pause, let's pause and everything and say let's celebrate a history that still traumatizes a lot of folks till today. So Black History Month for me, I just sometimes in the past years just sit there and like, why do we have Black History Month? What does that mean? That's where I'm at.
That's a great place to be at. Michaela, so do you buy this conclusion that Charles has that Black History Month goes beyond that February month?
Yeah, I mean, I think it should. I think for the majority of Americans, it doesn't, because the majority of Americans aren't black. And so, you know, this History Month, it raises a lot of eyebrows sometimes still about, like, why are we still focusing on this? Or, you know, why do you get your own month? So I think for people who ask those sorts of questions, it doesn't extend through the whole year. They only have to think about it for February. But people who are black and who have black ancestry, I think it kind of extends throughout the whole year because, you know, as Charles said, your ancestry is just worn. You know, it's not something that you can hide. And so if you're going to, you know, survive and live a happy life, you kind of have to celebrate yourself in that way, at least a little bit every day or every week, you know. So, yeah, I think it extends beyond February, hopefully, for most of us.
Very good. I believe that as well. So earlier, Michaela, you talked about supporting businesses, black-owned businesses, this, that, and the other, and how important that was. Mm-hmm. So let me throw this out at you and have you respond to it, both you and Charles. So if in our community, our buying power is worth $1.2 to $1.3 trillion, why do you believe those dollars are not necessarily coming back to our communities? Because they really aren't.
Yeah. So you're asking why the buying power of...
within our community.
Okay, yeah. Is not staying within our community?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I mentioned, a lot of positions of power are held by non-people of color. So essentially white people, right? So they own the businesses that we have to go to. And that's just the short answer, right? Mm-hmm. So they own the grocery stores and they own the clothing stores. And also, if you want to look at the economic, you know, diversity within our country, black people and brown people in general generally sit on the lower end of a socioeconomic status, which means that we can't always go to specialty stores which may be owned by people of color, or at least businesses who are trying their best to support diversity or charitable organizations. Instead, we have to spend those dollars at large organizations like Walmart or Target or things like that that are definitely not going back into our communities at all. So I think, you know, it's a layered answer, but the short answer is just that we don't own the places that we need to shop at.
Charles, you want to follow up on that?
So I want to answer that question, but I think we skipped you on what Black History Month means to
I'm
you.
Going to come back
we'll
to
come
that.
Back that. Okay.
I'm definitely
okay,
coming
definitely.
Back to that. Yep. But Michaela had mentioned supporting black businesses, so yep. I wanted to come back with that question
and get
your responses to that.
That is a big question, because for that part of this conversation, it might make sense to peel back equality and race issue and look at it from an educational point of view, right? If I own... it's a laughable amount. One million. What would I do with that? Would I go out and buy some Jordans, buy some expensive cars or whatnot? I would want to do that so I can maybe impress some folks or feel like I've got some money to show that I've got some diamonds, you know, all of that. It's a culture. It's maybe hip-hop culture, which is all well and good, but then how is that impacting your community? Like, now let's compare that person, let's just say that person is African-American, for example, compare that to a Caucasian family with 1 million. They won't buy Jordans, they won't buy 2 Chainz, won't buy those expensive cars, but buy things that are needed to sustain themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And then invest somehow in maybe property or invest in some business. And during that investment, they'll hire folks that they know, like my uncle's sister needs some type of job, or do you need help, you know, all that stuff. So they'll hire folks in that community, and the money is pumping back into the community, right? I think there is a lack of financial education, which has been because of a lot of, you know, slave history, because of a lot of inequalities in the community that have oppressed folks' way of thinking about money, and then the money does not come back into the community. Not until recent,
A lot of African American now investing on their own self, investing in the pride, investing in anything African or African American. I mean, we're going to see a change in the next 10 years because young African American kids are doing more in the community than before. It's all about education. It's all about investing in your community, investing in your group, and just spreading that wealth that way. But I think that really is my sense in that. There are a lot of inequalities, equality issues, a lot of racial issues, but peeling that out first and then grouping in, like having community and doing business in that community will in itself lift up that community that's looking for some type of, you know, wealth.
I mean, you know, the mere fact that we're worth that kind of money mm-hmm. as a group collectively says, you know, that's we're worth more than some countries.
Yeah.
Here in America, right? Yeah. As an African heritage group, we're worth $1.2 to $1.3 trillion.
But where's that money coming from, though? It's not old money. It's basketball
not.
Money. It's businesses.
Exactly.
It's sports and investments and some kind of lawsuits and all that, inversion. All
but
that
those
stuff.
Dollars are not circling
They're
back
not.
To our communities.
Yeah. No.
You know, it's not getting back to us. It's mm-hmm. not coming full circle. And I think that's the issue that we have in our communities because we're not able to figure that out. Right?
It's based on personality. It's based on the family. It's based on your upbringing. If you've never seen money in your life before.
That's right.
And got into money through basketball, you're going to be culture shocked.
Yeah. And right? you're going to be spending.
You're going to be spending. You're going to want to buy three cars. You want to buy, want to rent the best. No rent. You want to rent the best apartment in Miami or something. You want to supposed to buy. Mm-hmm. You want to, you know, buy gold. You know, and you want to move out of the block, right?
That's right.
Move out of the block where mm-hmm. you were raised, as opposed to invest in the block, mm-hmm. Buy your own place and build the. You know, so like, there's a whole lot of layered issue when it comes to wealth and finances within African American groups. There are some percentage of folks that are doing really well. And they've now gotten the knowledge. But some folks that really still believe in that, you know, sense of, you know, just acquiring things that really don't build your wealth.
You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, so let's get back to that initial question, though, about what does Black History Month mean to you?
Yep.
And I'm going to have you, Charles. Tell our listeners what Black History Month means to you as a person.
Well, I mean, I did say a bit about that prior to the conversation about wealth. But I am Nigerian first, right? So Black History Month to me means totally different from an African-American individual because there's a whole lot of family dynamic, a lot of trauma, a lot of, you know, history that ties with their experience. My experience is a bit different. My experience is from afar. Like, I've heard this. I'm now living in that community, but I still cannot necessarily connect to that history.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to have a history month. But like I said, the history, you know, is history, but it still affects life every day. Like, every day you still face challenges that are related to African-American culture. But what I want to know, Henry, is, what does Black History Month mean to you? You were born in, you say, Missouri, mm-hmm. Raised there. There's a whole lot of things that happened in Missouri in history.
All kinds of things, yeah.
Yeah, like yeah. How does that connect to your experience right now? How does that connect to your experience moving forward? What is it that you, sometimes you have this feeling of history, especially your history, that just makes you just like shake your head and still, you know, get glad that things are happening. You know that.
Interesting. Black History, in a nutshell, means to me that that I'm standing on the shoulders of so many that have gone on before
right.
me,
right.
that have laid the foundation
right.
for me to do even this kind of work and having these kinds of conversations. There are others that had. experienced even more so negative stuff
right.
that we've experienced. They experienced even more for us to get to this point. So that's what Black history means to me. It's that somebody went before me mm-hmm. so that I could experience these positive things that are going on, even with the conversation we're having right here.
So for a month, how do you celebrate that experience? I mean, what do you kick up at the end of the day, get a glass of whiskey, like the best fine whiskey and a cigar, if you ever do that?
No,
just hang
no,
out.
No, do you, I don't do what any do you do? Of that. that for me is not how I would celebrate
so how would you
Black
celebrate?
History. Yeah. I celebrate Black history, again, knowing that there are those that had gone on before me and mm-hmm. what I now have to do moving forward in my life, and I've always had this, mm-hmm. that Black history is not just the celebration in February. For me, it's yeah. the whole entire year. Yeah. 365 days out of the year, mm-hmm. I celebrate who I am as an African heritage person. Mm-hmm. I can't change that. Yeah. I don't want to change that, but I cannot just relegate that expression of who I am as a person to a month that has 28 days in it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Makes sense.
Somebody yeah. selected that month, right?
Who
the shortest day in the year.
Who selected
shortest that? Month in the year.
Who anointed that month, Black History Month? Who, I mean, who
you got to do your research on that because yeah. because the shortest month with 28 days. Why couldn't it have been a month with 31 days, right? So somebody had to consciously figure that out, that they were going to celebrate that month in February. But we have to really stretch our imaginations a little bit more and really celebrate, as you all mentioned, every single day of the year. It can't stop there.
So, I mean, great thing we have Google now. Carter G. Woodson.
I knew that, yes.
You know, created the Black History Month.
That's right.
Essentially.
Carter G. Woodson.
Which I'm glad it was an African-American person that
yes.
did that.
Somebody did it, right?
Yeah, just to consciously celebrate the time that forefathers experienced. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing. But do young African-American people celebrate Black History Month? Do they celebrate it like they would celebrate Christmas?
Not that I have noticed.
Not that I've noticed yeah. either. Yeah.
It seems less about a celebration, right, which kind of brings to mind, you know, parties or something like that, and more of using that time where the nation is kind of focused on this idea of mm-hmm. Black History Month to kind of dispel negative stereotypes and ideas about the Black community, the African-American community, and the African community too, and kind of promote new ideas and promote, you know, genuine thoughts and try and help our community. I think it's, I mean, especially now, it's much more of an online thing, right? Mm-hmm. We bring our social activism online and we talk about, you know, bringing yourself out of poverty. And kind of back to that conversation, it is very much about financial literacy when we're talking about, you know, how Black people can keep their dollars within their community and how they can promote their community. And it's also kind of a bigger conversation too about poverty in general, about how, you know, buying a pair of Jordans, that $250 isn't going to lift your family out of poverty. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't be criticizing people for, you know, having the sort of daily or yearly goods that make them feel like they're normal and part of a community.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, everyone else gets to have those things too. So I think it's a lot about promoting those sorts of ideas and making sure that social activism is happening and people are recognizing that mm-hmm. while we have this platform and this kind of spotlight for a month.
You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Sure,
I'm here with Michaela Lampert and Charles OBJ. We are talking Black history, the importance of Black history. Not just a month, it's an everyday thing for us, and the importance of that Being said, I want to read something to you, and I want the two of you to comment about this. This struck me the other day while listening to a speaker from Chicago talk, and this is what he said. He said, the moment you recognize your spiritual identity, that's the moment you become the most dangerous person around. Hmm. I'm going to tie that into our understanding of Black history, and once we realize our spiritual identity, how that enhances who we are as people of color, especially as African heritage people. Charles?
Well, I mean, that was a good reading you have there. I think it goes along a whole lot to just identify who you are first. So then you can better experience whatever it is you're experiencing.
Yes.
That is a key for everyone. But I personally think Black History Month is celebrated only by African Americans. I think it also is an opportunity to educate the broader community about inventors or businesses in the community, like Michaela said. But I think there's a boring side to Black History Month. I think there should be about like 20 fun facts, you know, type situation, or what you can do as a Caucasian person to celebrate Black History Month. It could mean maybe, you know, eating at a Black-owned restaurant, experiencing that, you know, having like an African-American type food. You know, the most easiest one can, you know, come up with is waffles and chicken, right? Or grits and vegetables and
collard greens,
you know. Yeah. So like going that extra length to educate yourself about Black History Month is key. It's not just for African-Americans in the community. It should be flipped around to everyone should observe that by, you know, picking out something that you can, you can mix up, you know, to experience Black history. I was, while everyone was talking, I was just, you know, writing some stuff down. What can you do as a Caucasian person to celebrate Black history? Eat some African-American food, maybe?
Or let me stop you for a second. Yeah. So I'm not changing your perspective here, but I think the real question is, what will you do as a Caucasian person in celebration of Black history?
Right. What would you do?
What would you do?
What would you do? I mean, there are a lot of events going on in the community, service going on. UMD has a lot of events around Black History Month. Maybe taking an opportunity to find out events that you can go to better educate yourself about Black history.
And I know the UWS, University of Wisconsin Superior Black Student Union, is going to have their soul food dinner. That's going to be coming up later this month. Yeah. I believe it's already sold out. So that's how
good.
Important it is to folks on the campus and in the community that event's already sold out.
This is funny though, but I mean, this might be a bit controversial. Maybe you don't wear your MAGA hat on Black History Month. Maybe you just wait till after February, then put it back on if you want to do that. You know?
Well, that's an interesting suggestion.
You know, there's some things that shows kindness that people don't really think about. Just, you know, doing something that is Black history conscious, you know?
Yes.
Could go a long way for your Black friends, you know, because right now I think we're not getting any more siloed. We're getting connected by media a whole lot. Like, I might be talking to a Twitter friend that I don't even know what his race is, you know, or what their race are. But just doing something as kind as, you know, being kind to orders in this month, it could be, you know, an educational point for everyone, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my perspective. I don't know what
you... Michaela, how are you feeling right now hearing all of that just coming from Charles?
I think he has a good point. I don't know. It's hard to tell people how to celebrate, right, or how to recognize something because it's all based on, well, first of all, if they think this is a legitimate celebration or holiday in the first place. And then also, you know, it's challenging someone's view of themselves to tell them that they need to celebrate this and they need to recognize their privilege within this month if they're, you know, Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is sort of part of the problem and why we don't have a consensus on why this should be a holiday, or why there should be events going on, or why we should mm-hmm. be talking about these sorts of things, because people think, you know, hey, I'm pretty woke, right? Mm-hmm. I'm already like, right. I don't like racism. And so I think when you ask them to do more about what they're doing in their community or to question what they think, then it kind of leads to a sort of a moment where people are stunned or mm-hmm. or a little shaken up. And so that is kind of hard, but I mean, not a bad suggestion, you know. Wear your MAGA hat after February, or maybe go to a black restaurant, or talk to your black friends about some of the challenges that they're facing within their educational system or within their community or at home, you know, things like that, that kind of focus on their identity as a black person in America.
So, go ahead, Charles.
Or just watch an African history movie, you know, and for the month of February, you could do that. Because I think in the past year, people just observe it, oh, African History Month, and that's about all they do. They just mention it. but I think as we grow much older, it makes sense to educate everyone around us.
Yeah.
I think our future kids don't have the luxury of time to have a mistake happen, right? To have someone be as ignorant as to do something based on race. It makes sense to educate everyone around us. We all have friends who are white, and you know, we care for them. Sometimes they do things that are as ignorant as possible, and then we have to like shock them with like, no, that sounds racist, don't say that again, right? So things like that is very active educational point for individuals that we surround ourselves with. Black History Month is an opportunity to do just that, to say, this is my perspective as a black person. Whenever I see a cop pass, I'm like, oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I'm in a big store, someone might be following me thinking I'm gonna be stealing something. You know, those type of things happen to black people a lot. Talking about that, having meetings or having a community space to be able to talk or share your feelings as a black person goes a long way. If you don't know, you don't know. If I don't know that you feel that way, I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. But if we talk about, hey, let's go powwow, that's not a thing to say.
It's not. That's
you
right.
Know, like,
that's
right. You right know, on. Words like that, you know.
Yes.
Even all the way till that's retarded. You know, those type of buzzwords, people should be a bit conscious about the things you say, what you do, how you do them anyways.
So in the American consciousness mm-hmm. right now, do you believe America, in regard to its race relations, more specifically regarding African heritage people, do you believe we've gotten better or worse? In your opinion, where do you believe America stands with regard to its ability to be inclusive and welcoming of people that look like us?
What is your benchmark? Like what from better from when I think I want
to
ask.
From where we were 8 years ago to where we are now.
Well, I think the ability to be inclusive, I would say is the same, right? Because we have some laws in place, you know, we have things that keep diversity sort of in some economic circles, some business circles, educational circles. I think that overt racism has gotten a lot worse in the last 8 years. And I think that's important. And people should recognize that. But I think, I mean, you know, it just depends on what kind of circle you're in, right? Or what state you're in, or what your family is like, right? It's just there's so many levels in different groups that you belong to that would affect your answer. But I think, you know, in terms of overt racism and actions against the self have gotten a lot worse. But I think in large groups, we still have that diversity and that sort of inclusivity that we have to have because of the laws that we have put in place. And then the people in power who do still care about those things, at least in my experience.
So you say that we have to have, right?
Yeah.
Based on laws. Mm-hmm. So My question is, though, have we gotten better or worse?
I
yes
think we're
or
the
no?
Same. We're the same.
Okay. Charles?
Well, Michaela, you're very right. You're spot on that. But my experience is totally different. I think before iPhones, before any phones, no one knew, you know, black people were getting shot by cops, or that people were planning things in their cars. That when you go to court for like a simple ticket, it could like be a felony, like right because you have no great representation. No one knew that you had rights, you know, to be able to videotape cops. No one knew you can speak up, you know, to say no. But when media came open, like we started experiencing that, my goodness, someone died because they had a permit and were carrying anyways, but they still got shot,
and
right?
They still died, right?
So like I start to think about that often. I'm like, okay, what does that really make sense? That someone just got shot, you know, that fast, 5 times, 10 times in the back. No, it doesn't make sense. It don't make sense at all. You can attribute many things to it. One, maybe the cops was really afraid, and it was adrenaline was running. I mean, rushing fast, and then it pulled the trigger. Now, if we were to, you know, take that African American out of the situation and put a white Caucasian person in there, and do the same scenario, right? Would that person still have an adrenaline rush, or would he just calm down a little bit? That person looks like my uncle. I'm going to ask him some more questions to find out exactly why are you stupid, you know? Because some of the issues that we're facing are, you know, things that you can have discretion, you know, to say.
But Charles,
yeah,
since you changed the situation,
yeah,
and so the person on this end is white, and the person on this end is white,
mm-hmm.
that person is still alive.
They're alive. You know why? Because they're dialoguing.
Mm-hmm.
They're having a conversation. He's trying to find out, like, what's going on.
Yeah.
You're either going to go to jail or you're going to go to jail. You know, that's the conversation. But for the African-American person, it ends up 9 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, my question is, could you shoot him on the legs, or could you do something different? Why, you know, kill
Shaq? Those are the real questions in 2019.
In 2019.
We're still talking about this.
It's because of media that we are now finding out that there's a whole lot of racist stuff going on, and it's still going on, even more worse.
Mm-hmm. Dr. King said, though, way back in the 60s, right. that happens to be relevant for today,
right.
2019, that the thing that is going to keep us separate in this country mm-hmm. is race.
Race, yeah.
It's still to this day,
yeah.
and that was back in the 60s.
So I think we also look at race from just one perspective alone, too, right? There's racial discrimination even within African cultures.
There is.
You know, so a lighter toned person
That's
is
right.
much better than a darker toned person.
That's right.
That is because of the media. That's because of the influence of the Western culture. That message has been passed. Lighter skin is better than darker skin. And
mm-hmm.
then the African heritage just, you know, did the same thing, you know, persecuted the lowest next person.
Yes.
So race is race, whether that is within a community, a culture, or from a Caucasian person, you know, to a black person. The idea is that someone is less than.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to the conclusion that people who think that one person is less than are doing that because they have identified your capacity. They've identified that you have a lot more strength or a lot more to offer and just want to suppress that.
That's right.
You know, that is what I've come to understand about all of the story about less than. And, you know, to follow up with how do we heal from all of that, because when you heal, when you do things that helps you heal, you don't pay a lot of attention to all of the hate, all of the evil going on,
mm-hmm.
But just learn to defend yourself, learn to represent yourself, learn to take your kids into law enforcement schools or to being a lawyer to represent you. Still invest in that community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Invest in the professionals you want to see in the future. You know, that's my...
Well, will we get this right, Michaela? Will we ever get this right in America?
I'm inclined to say no. Because I study sociology, right? And I try to understand why people feel this way. And there's so much history in separating people based on race, which is a construct, and ethnicity, which is not. And, you know, it's so hard to get past that. Now, I think that we could achieve some sort of, I don't know, equality, maybe. But I think it's really hard under our current system. And without a systematic reform in terms of how power is structured and how sort of nepotism can survive, you know, just kind of how capitalism works in general nowadays, this form of capitalism that we use. No, I don't think that the race problem will ever be solved in the U.S. And I think that's an unfortunate truth. But I think that we can work to at least achieve some sort of respect in our differences, at least that. And hopefully that helps enough where we can, you know, get along side by side and work together to make a good community for all of us, even if it's not as integrated or as we see equal right now. If that makes sense.
Charles, do you agree with what she just said?
I agree totally with what she said. We're always going to be different. Thinking, experience is going to be very different. You know, to say the next person who don't have that understanding of your experience to get it, even in a year, is like a full-time job.
Yes.
You know, it's a full-time job for someone else to be able to get your experience, even if we're in the same culture or community. We all live inside our head, but there's that one common theme of race issues, right? I don't think we're going to ever get it. I think we're going to continue to struggle. But like she said, we're going to learn to understand someone else's culture and be humble towards their culture. I think this is where our society is going, moving towards.
Thank you. I appreciate this conversation. I want to close by saying this. Late Senator from Minnesota, Paul Wellstone, his comments were something like this. We all do better when we all do better. As a society, we need to do better. This is Henry Banks. Thanks for listening to People of Color. Again, Michaela Lampert and Charles OBJ were my guests today. And we have a great evening and a great weekend. Coming up next week on People of Color, conversation with Professor Jokey Kamal from the University of Minnesota in Duluth.